outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Okay, a couple of announcements here before we start the podcast. The first one is about a new series of conversations Sarah and I are going to host about wrestling with trauma. First one is this Saturday, January 14th. If you want to join us, get the details at the website. And the same is true for those of us who would like to join the next edition of the Jake Colson Book Club. That will be Saturday, January 21st at 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon Pacific Standard Time. Details are on the website. Check it out there.
Wayne, I had probably one of the sweetest encounters with God that I've had in a while.
Wow.
I was driving down the road on my way back from Sydney this last week on Thursday, and was having a wonderful conversation with a friend. And in the midst of the conversation, I just felt like there was this like smile. Like I just felt like God was smiling, like the smile of delight. In the midst of it, as we're driving, like I just sense him say, "Your life makes me smile." Dude, I was in the company car, so I have to like slow down and pull over out of the side of the road because there's tears starting to stream down my eyes, out of my eyes. And it was the fun part was it was so kind, and it just like, it caught me off guard. And it was in the middle of me talking with this friend about, you know, different options. And Jess and I have been talking about some different potential movements in our life, both career and location and just our family heart. And I was really mulling over some of those things and just got this sense of him saying like, "Your life makes me smile." And it had absolutely nothing to do with what I was doing, or it was just, your life makes me smile. It was one of those moments where I got caught off guard by God just dropping a really, really kind note in the middle of a day that I didn't even know that I needed. It was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Now, how do you sense that? Because people are going to say, "What? Hey, man, what? How do you sense God smiling?" I mean, what? You have a vision? You have a just something in your mind that? How's that sink in?
Two things. It was in the midst of my conversation with my friend. All of a sudden, I felt like this wave of delight or being valued just wash over me. It was just like this feeling, this sense that I got, which was kind of weird because it was out of nowhere. I'm just driving down the road, right? Like, yeah. I'm in the car by myself. And so there was just this feeling of delight. And then it was like this thought popped into my head that was completely left field. Like, it had nothing to do with the conversation that I was having with my friend. It just was this thought of, "Your life makes me smile." And instantaneous, like it went by everything that I was talking about. It went, and there was just like this deep heart impact. As soon as that thought landed in my mind, there was just this deep heart impact of, I didn't even know I needed to hear that. And yet it cut to the chase of everything that I had just been talking about. That's and cool. I couldn't have created, and I'm not that good. I couldn't have manufactured that or created that on my own. Like, I am not that good. It was just this, man. Yeah. It was this emotion that washed over me. And then this thought that popped into my head that had nothing to do with the conversation that I was having, but just impacted my heart instantaneously the moment that it came in.
Man, reminds me of Wayne's happiest day ever and some of those thoughts that dropped into my heart that day. And yeah. I love the way God does that. Just especially when you're not necessarily, I was thinking about that the other day. The most amazing moments I had with God were not not a vote against quiet times, but never came at a time when I was trying to have a moment with God.
Yeah. No, I completely know. And I think that's part of learning just to enjoy and live life in the consistency of his delight, right? Like just playing with him, enjoying life with him. That does not align with what I had originally experienced when it came to religion and what it meant to walk with God and to sojourn with him and be in relationship with him. That was not the context that I started encountering that stuff, but it was, you know, out in the outdoors, walking in the wood, even random stuff like there would be times when I'd be out working cattle with my dad and a thought would pop into my head or an idea would come or just a feeling of emotion or whatever. And completely unsolicited, totally left field, and yet so specific and impactful to the moment.
Yeah, it's strange to me because I grew up being a white knuckler kind of guy, you know, to really get in, press into God's revelation. And I still believe in intentional times when you're seeking, yielding, holding space for God in your heart and reading scripture and getting your heart around some of what's true about God's revelation in the world. I'm nuts about those things are valuable, but yeah. The moments of real transformative exposure come in the real unexpected moments and often very playful like that. I mean, it's not just you playing with God, it's God playing with you.
Yeah.
It's dropping in that kind of a comment just in your heart in the middle of a conversation with somebody else. And it's, I think we know it's God because it's so transformative in the middle of a day when you're not expecting it. It just touches a deep place in your heart, opens doors to something you weren't necessarily thinking about. And I love that. I like it when it happens in my life. And I had one of those encounters a couple of weeks ago, which we haven't shared on here yet. Maybe will, probably not today, but because it's still rambling around in my heart. But I even thought the next day, well, I'd love to do that again. And it was like, I don't even know how to do that again. I mean, I could go sit in a room and make up some stuff, but no, there's no way to make it up. God lets his glory, which is part of that transformational chart we were playing with, God reveals. Are we on that wavelength? Are we in that rhythm of grace, of God's whatever, so that we recognize it? And I think a lot of people have those moments, but dismiss them very quickly. Don't see him as God because, oh, it didn't happen in a service. It didn't happen at a prayer time. It didn't happen over here. So that's just some random thought over there. But I think it behooves us to spend a little time with those random thoughts and hold them in our heart a little longer and see what God's revealing. Because I think that's the kind of interaction God has with us all the time if we wouldn't miss it because we're distracted or dismissive, like God wouldn't smile at me. So I wonder how many people had that thought. And just the next thought was all the stuff I'm struggling with and where I'm hurting, where I'm being tempted, where I'm failing. And so they could dismiss it out of hand.
Well, and even that, like that's one of the reasons why I knew that it had to be him, because it disarmed every doubt that I was having in the conversation that I was currently having with my friend. Yeah. And there was like some doubts and some things I was wrestling with. And it took out the argument. Like it wasn't even the conversation anymore. Like that, you know, in some regards, it was just like, that doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter anymore. It was just so cool that happened in that moment. And I think that's part of having our relational expectations on God recalibrated. Right. Like the relational expectations that I had on Father were initially very structured, was very much on performance. It was very much on my behavior. It was getting in line, submitting to authority, like all these things that now like just kind of peg my yuck meter in a lot of regards. and yet there wasn't this expectation of God might be playful. God might joke with me. God might just have a word of encouragement for me. God might play with, like, literally be playful with me in the moment. That wasn't a relational expectation. So I didn't even start to look for it. Like, there was no way in my mind of the expectation that I have of God and how he relates with me to even look for that. That wasn't even something that was on my radar.
And it was probably still happening. It just was not going noted and identified and embraced. Because I think even God smiling at us is not necessarily like, Kyle, you're my perfect child, and I just think you're awesome, and you've done everything so well. I think it's like a three-year-old. You look at your kid, child, sometimes you want to strangle it because it just, but there's times you just kind of growl, love that, just bring a smile to my heart. And a smile to our heart is, like you said, it's the delight of the Father, not some achievement we've made for doing something perfectly. Yeah.
And as I love that you use that example, because as the father of a current three-year-old, like there are times where I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then there are other times where she just utterly melts my heart. Like, and it catches me off guard. I'm just like, I'm taken aback. I'm just like, man, it's incredible. Like, I love to be your dad and get to be invited into your life.
That's cool. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we want to welcome you to season 19, episode 2. Wow. Somebody said the other day, you're getting close to 1,000 podcasts. I'm going, dude, that just sounds really, sounds like I've become addicted to something. I'll need to cut free of at some point before we get to 1,000. We'll see.
Well, I mean, we're roughly 18 months out. If we do a podcast every week, we're roughly 18 months out from hitting the 1,000 mark. So you've got some time to sort it out.
18 months, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, you did the math.
Oh, I was thinking about it. It was like a little over 100.
Gee, we'll have to quit by then.
And there's 52 weeks in the year, you know? So I was like, oh, okay, you know? So it might actually be 2 years.
I was talking to somebody the other day who's writing their autobiography. And I said, you know, my autobiography is probably in these 870 some odd podcasts, because just about everything that's gone on in my life previous and in the last 20 years has somehow found its way on a podcast in one form or another.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll write my own someday. You never know. You got a best thing I heard this week.
Well, it's interesting. Your life makes me smile. I had just a really sweet memory come up today. So on my Instagram feed there, I was watching this video and it was of this raging waterfall in California. Well, it's the waterfall that's near where you live in Escondido. I think that's in Escondido. Thank you.
Not near me. That's further south.
Well, yeah, a little further south.
Closer than Wyoming, but not too.
Yes.
Close.
Yes. So my brother actually came out to California and hiked up there with his to-be fiance, now wife, to propose to her there. And it was during the drought that California was going through. And so it was just like this trickle mud sludge of a waterfall. Like there's nothing there. And so then watching the waterfall raging in this video from all the rain that you guys have been getting, I was like, oh, that was the waterfall that I sent my brother to go and propose to his wife that wasn't existent. And
you sent and him the there. Cool, you sent,
I sent
you
him couldn't. There. I sent him there. Yeah.
There are beaches that are glorious, even if we are in a drought. And you send him to a waterfall, it's a mud trickle.
And it's so hilarious that you say that because he came back and he was like, well, there wasn't really a waterfall and I didn't propose. And we met him at Point Doom in Malibu.
Which is a beautiful beach. Point Doom doesn't sound great, but
it's a gorgeous beach.
Yes.
And the sun is setting. There are literally dolphins that are swimming in the waves off of the beach. And that's where my brother ended up proposing. After he like came to meet us and tell us about this epic fail of going to the waterfall. So it's just that seeing that video just brought back some really beautiful memories for me and my brother. So
real dolphins, or were they the Disney mechanical dolphins that play off the California coast for tourists?
They were actual real thing. Okay. The actual real thing.
Yeah. I just started a rumor for Disney. So everybody now is listening to the dolphin. Is that one of Disney's or is that ours? Is that God's? It's hilarious. You never know in California. There's so many made-up animals out here. Well, that water...
What's the best thing you heard this week?
Well, that waterfall wouldn't be dry now. I'm telling you, man. We are getting deluge with Arctic... What do they call these things? Cyclone bomb something river, Arctic river. We are getting We're getting today like 3.5 inches of rain today. And it just keeps coming down. And if you live back east, that's a pretty normal day. For California, this is amazing. The Northern California's been getting a ton. This is the first time the Southern California is getting a significant amount. But I don't think people go, oh, the drought's over. Probably not, man. We're not getting enough rain and there's no places to store it anyway. It's all we walk along a watershed area when Sarah and I walk the dogs here. And man, that water goes straight to the ocean. So much of it. There's just no way to. Yeah. We built a bullet train to nowhere, the Democratic majority in California, instead of actually building some dam somewhere to hold some water. And that's just a little political insight for someone dying in California. In any case, best thing I heard this week.
Yes, best thing you heard this week.
A friend of mine actually sent me this quote from Reversed Thunder by Eugene Peterson. I've not read the book yet, but I like Eugene. Always have. He says, for people whose habit is faith, whose disposition in matters of God and the supernatural is toward acceptance, it is easy to be deceived by religious leaders. Organized behavior is prone to violence. Organized belief is prone to deceit. I thought that was interesting. Organized behavior is prone toward violence. And we've seen that in the political arena, both sides, whether it's physical violence or verbal violence. And the other thing I've seen a ton among my brothers and sisters in Christ, where deception is easy. It's easy to spin a narrative, get people to believe it, may not be true. And people who lose that heart for truth, what's really true, not what I want to be true, not the narrative I can spin to make me look good. It's just, I think, what was that movie, Inside Out or whatever, where opinions are not facts. And I think, you know, in an age when everybody has their own truth, so you have yours, I have mine. And when there's something to that that's valuable. I'm not saying there's not. You have your story. Other people may have a different story. But when you talk about what's true and not true in ways that matter to God, it does matter what you believe is true or whether you've just been sucked into something that made you feel good. So you believed it was true because it felt right rather than was right, was true. I've been chewing on that a little bit.
I want to dive into that a little bit more because we've been talking a little bit about even like going into the weeds and God finding us in the weeds. That was one of the conversations that we had in last year, near the end of last year. So unpack that a little bit more for me as far as connecting and engaging with the truth that God wants us to engage with and to connect with. And how do we recognize that truth? How do we know that we are hearing that truth, interpreting that truth, connecting with that truth in a real and authentic way? Does that make sense?
It does, but I don't know what the objective test is. I mean, someone, well, it's scripture, except scripture can be twisted in any way you want to twist scripture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some of the most profoundly untrue things have been taught from scripture, pulling proof texts from various places in creative, again, the narrative that you want people to believe. Politics, what that, the gathering storm, the coming storm, some of us talked to and listened to and podcast about it. Talked about how it's not important anymore as to what's true or not true. It's can you spin the believable narrative?
Yeah.
And that just, there's something in that just destroys my soul, to be honest with you. Because I think wherever light is, there's a friend of mine had written on the bulletin board or the blackboard at the place where he works. I put on my Instagram feed today. Love is the conduit through which truth travels, which I love that. But it's also true that without truth, we end up with an imposter version of love. Those two really spin together. And if you don't have a heart for truth, and I know many people who don't anymore, they have a heart for comfort. And so they're going to find something that lets them be comfortable. Or they're going to make up a story that even though if it's not true, it at least explains their feelings. So they're going to, if it's not true, at least expresses something that's true or whatever. And I've had that in my life where I've been accused of things going, okay, that's not true. Well, it justifies their anger. So they want to believe that it's true, whether it's not true at all. Having a heart for truth and then knowing if you're in it or not, that's the trick, right? Because we all have the capacity to self-deceive. And every scientific study that measures that, you want something bad enough, you will make yourself believe whatever you have to make that work. And to have an open-hearted view of truth, I guess the way to know is I would ask somebody, how many uncomfortable realities did you come across last year? So if you didn't come across any, then I'm thinking, yeah, you're probably really good at deciding what's true by what makes you feel good. I constantly come across the unsettling. Truth is always, and I know when we say truth right like that, people are thinking objective truth. Jesus died on the cross, born of a virgin, coming again. You know, we're thinking all the doctrinal things because Christianity has shaped our heart that way. I think the truth that I'm talking about is what's true about God, what's true about Wayne, and what's true about the circumstances I'm in that will give me guidance as to how to lean into God's reality with what's going on rather than doing what makes Wayne feel good, comfortable, safe, or happy. To me, it's what's true. It's what's in reality. And almost the physical, temporal world we engage with is all about illusions. You know, we talked about the illusion of control last week. And there's many of those. There's just the illusion. The whole American dream and lifestyle is an illusion that the world doesn't have access to. And those of us who do feel like, oh, well, we've earned it in some way because we're in a better nation and we've had better this or better that. And we don't realize 99% of it is the chance of birth, where you were born, determined everything for us. And having a more compassionate, generous heart for the world is to realize, no, I haven't earned everything I have. I haven't earned much of anything I have. I was born white in the middle 1900s. We have lived in the most incredible time of economic expansion, of world peace, of, you know, overall, than any generation before us, and likely any generation after, if something doesn't change. Someone's saying there's some scientific world study, whatever, in the next few decades, we're going to need to discover 5 new Earths in the universe to harvest their resources to pay for the lifestyle we live in the world today. For the food we need, the minerals we need, the elements we need. I just go, okay, that's not good news. If they're right, then we've got to be on the brink of the end of the age, because we're not discovering 5 Earths that we can go harvest. But that mentality is exactly what accounted for the Roman Empire. We're consuming more than we have, so we've got to go conquer the Babylonians or the Greeks, or we keep pushing east, west, wherever we're going, to find what we need to pay for our lifestyle. That whole idea of harvesting someone else's goods. If we found 5 Earths and we need it, do we kill the inhabitants there to take their... And human history says, yes, we would.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it, because we need to exist, and I'm the center of my universe. So having a trueness, how do I say it better? Because not just doctrinal truths, it's a trueness of who God is, what his purpose is in the universe, what salvation is, and how I fit into that. And having neither a higher view of myself than God does, or a lower view of myself than God does. That's a tricky space to live in. And if the Holy Spirit doesn't reveal to us, I don't think we find that on our own. I don't think the book is there. I don't think scriptures will give you that. I think scriptures kind of lead you on the journey where you and God get to discover that together, where God gets to let you in on stuff. So I would ask people, how many discomforting revelations have you had in the last year? Because that's going to be a good gauge as to whether or not you're coming to embrace what's true, or you keep building the narratives that comfort you for the moment. The other, I guess the backside of that would be then too, is how much of your supposed truths didn't come true, aren't coming true. You keep fighting for something that's not there. And so then the blame goes to God. That a lot of people that are angry at God are angry that their illusion isn't real, and they blame God for that.
It's interesting how often has your truth come true? For me, I think about the idea of truth continuing to unfold as well. Like, I think about me holding on to my knowing with a level of humility, saying, I guess humility is the best way to say it, in regards to, this is what I think I know right now, and this is what's resonating, but I also am very much under the understanding that God is continuing to work out his salvation in my life. And so the understanding and the knowledge and the connection with his truth and his kingdom that I have right now is still growing, is still expanding as his kingdom and his salvation continues to expand in my life.
It's a real conundrum in this world, right? Because good leadership, when I learned it when I was in school and getting the early days of pastoring, is leadership is confidence. It's being the expert, knowing you've got the answers, and putting it on people. And confidence is what qualifies you. But one of the things I've come to learn in my journey is that the wisest men and women I know on the planet are also the humblest men and women I know. They hold truth lightly. There's not a lack of confidence about what they seem to know, but like you just said, they also know I'm in a process of learning this, so I might find out tomorrow something I thought was true isn't true. So I never come off as the expert. I come off as a person, I'm just a brother on a journey trying to help you see what I've seen that's blessed me. I get manuscripts all the time from authors. And when I first start reading, I can read the first two or three pages and go, okay, this is an expert. And I know he doesn't have all the answers, or she, but I know they want me to think they do, because that's how you sell a book. I'm an authority on this. This is the way. It turns me off. I want to see a traveler. Yeah. I want to see a humble heart. I want to see somebody, you know something, because God's revealed something to you, and that's valuable. At the same time, you don't have all the answers. You don't know the whole thing. There's a yielding to the larger, we use that orchestra illustration of the body of Christ, that larger sense of what are other people hearing and saying who know the God I know? Not necessarily what are the religious voices saying, because you got to have a good sense of what's a religious voice that you go, okay, it may seem confident, seem right, but they don't have a clue who God is. Versus someone who's really learning to live inside God's reality. And I think humility always marks it, which is strange to me, because the better you hear God, the more humble the heart becomes. And my growing up, it was just the opposite, man. People who thought they heard God, God woke me up in the middle of the night, he told me this, you need to do that. They're arrogant and angry, and they personify this, I can't possibly make a mistake, you idiot. And there's no way to have fellowship and community with that kind of voice. It's just impossible. And I think God has structured it in such a way. We, as Paul says, see through a glass darkly. So I don't hear with perfection. I see stuff like a good example is two doves when Sarah was gone. And, you know, I want that to be true. I want that Jesus, what Jesus seemed to say in that moment was this, what's happening is not what's really happening. And I will bring her back to you. And so don't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I want to believe that. And my better moments I did. In my longer moments, I was in complete despair and couldn't get my heart around that, though I was trying to. Because what's true will drive you nuts until it changes your heart. And then when it changes your, and then when it comes true and you say, okay, it was true. My better moments were in the space where I could hold on to that, not the better space when it was too good to be true. So it can't be God. It can't be just Wayne trying to embellish his own life. This is a tricky road, but it's the most important road we walk down is to discern what's true. Cause my ability to live in the world today is based on how much I have a sense of what's true in God's eyes about what's going on around me instead of the false confidence of my own truth. And I think that's where the bravado comes in oftentimes with people who try to project this confidence. It's really insecurity that is the opposite of humility, because that comes off braggadocious and confident and until it all doesn't work. And then they've got, then they'll just reformat and be as confident about the next lie they believed.
Well, and so it's funny that you mentioned Paul, because I literally wrote down in my notes, I have an issue with Paul for that. So this is something and this is probably an element that God is still untangling for me.
Yeah.
Is I always had an issue with some of the times when Paul was like, look at my life. If your life isn't mirroring my life, then you're wrong. Like you're in the weeds. You're off in the unknown. Like, and then he makes the statement, no, but I see through the glass darkly, you know, and he makes comments about how God's grace is sufficient, that I was praying for these things. I was praying for this thorn to be taken out. And then I'm seeing God make up in my weakness. And so, but man, I just have always wrestled when Paul is like, no, you need to be mirroring my life. Like, are you doing what I'm doing? Like, does your life mirror my life and the walk that I have with God? And maybe that's my own thing that God's still in.
That's how Paul gets preached. Is that what Paul really was saying? I had a guy tell me one time, we're sitting on a beach outside England. And he said, this is a guy from South Africa. He said, you know, I'm contemplating today, Wayne. This is an old guy, man, his 80s or something. And I said, what are you contemplating today? He said, I'm just contemplating how much Paul got it wrong. And I just said, that would drive everyone nuts that I've ever met in my evangelical Christian experience.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And he didn't mean what Paul got wrong. That's not what he was talking about. He was talking about how much we get Paul wrong. That we put the religious thing. I mean, most of the older translations of the English were meant to underscore the authority of the church. So they were written very authoritatively. They say if you read Paul in the early French translations, Paul comes off like the gentle grandpa of some young kids. Yeah. I wish our English versions did that. I have a different view when I read Paul. I think Paul is very much trying to give out his wisdom, saying stuff about being attuned to God. Then, you know, but he's always pointing people back to God. Not, there's that one thing about follow me as I follow Christ, but he's talking about the following of Christ, not copying his behaviors.
Yeah.
Right. So I do think we get that wrong. We're not going to get to these letters. You keep dragging on this discussion. My goodness. Come on, Kyle.
Let's dive into some letters.
I want to get into these. We only got 10 minutes left, but I want to get into some of this because I think it really, because we want to leave last year behind and move on, but some of these are really good. This is from a man in Australia named Lyndon. I listened with painful tears at the Redeeming Love podcast began. I remember thinking after the week one, this is as real as the God journey gets. Much of Christianity can often be blunted into idealized principles, but this is real people, real believers in real pain, looking to a loving God for real life answers. And I love that description. To me, that's what I want everybody to have. It's not just Sarah and my journey. That's everybody.
Yeah.
We just wanted to thank you both for having the courage to be so transparent about what you happened and the journey that followed, both individually and together. It could not have been an easy decision. However, by doing this, you've spoken directly into the reality of the trauma so many people have experienced, but have felt inadequate to express or be understood by others. Thank you, Sarah. You have our deepest admiration for being so brave and willing to share your story. This will help so many traumatized people by validating their pain and directing them to a loving Father who is in them and walking with them and will help them through it. Now, that's the reason I read that, because that's what Sarah wanted when we told our story, what she wanted to do in the telling of it. And it's what... I mean, I don't know what 2023 is going to hold for us. I was hoping to come out December going, okay, man, I got vision for that. I don't. And I laugh when I think about that, because last year, the vision I had at this time of the year was completely going to blow up in my face. So, yeah, I don't need to figure it out. But I know that whatever it will include, Sarah and I do want to connect more with traumatized people, or people, particularly people that are alone in their trauma and haven't. And we're not trauma counselors. We're not going to ever try to present ourselves as such, but we can be cheerleaders. We can encourage people who are facing trauma, like he says, who've never even looked at it very deeply, and find out maybe there's something here for me. And in fact, we're going to start that this Saturday, which is tomorrow for those hearing it. We're going to start having a series of Zoom sessions just with 12 people, no more than that, who just want to talk about trauma. The conversations we had on the road in the RV, Sarah wants to continue to have some of those. So we're going to first 12 volunteer. It may be closed by the time this airs. So, but we will have others. So if you want to, you know, let us know, we'll plan others and invite people into it. And we'll try to find some time zone efficiencies that work well from people all over the world. Because this has been the great, particularly among religious groups, trauma is the thing that's been unspoken and hidden.
Yeah.
And I know it's coming out in many quarters. I love that it is, but I think that's where we both, Sarah and I, want to be in those conversations with people. And Sarah's having surgery next week, so we won't be I won't be traveling for a while. I'm chief nurse and bottle washer around here for the next couple of months. So. And then we got this one from Nikolai. He said, I recently went through a difficult situation with someone that was confusing and frustrating for me. However, I somehow took into account that the person's behavior could be linked to trauma. This turned out to be the case. If you and Sarah had never shared your stories in the podcast, I probably would have gotten angry and got into a fight with them. Fortunately, I was aware enough that I didn't want to get in the way and make the problem worse instead. And it took a lot of effort. I tried to keep the person, give the person space to keep an open mind and keep taking them seriously. Long story short, in 5 days, the person received a lot of healing and recovery. I secretly think that a lot of the symptoms of trauma came up now because I was no longer an obstacle and was open to a different cause. Talking about trauma isn't just for the person who holds trauma. We all know people with trauma. And if we don't get our heads around what may be really going on there, so you kind of load up on Bible verses and performance stuff and you just condemn the person, you're exacerbating the trauma, you're perpetuating it. And so part of the conversation is that it's with people, you know, somebody who has trauma, you may have never identified that.
Yeah.
But because they act in ways that are irrational and hurtful and painful, maybe take a look at something different and give them the space to express it.
And yeah, I think that even circles back to some of the conversations that we were having last year about what does it mean to be a safe space for somebody to hold that. right? Like you, yes, there are people out there that actually have dedicated a lot of time and training and education into being able to help people heal through trauma. Yeah. And oh my gosh, the incredible value that those people bring to the world and the real incredible challenge that they face every day, right? To be able to hold that for other people comes at a cost, you know?
It does. And they're also very hard to find. That's what we yes. are discovering. I mean, they're like Sarah's first therapist sucked at trauma, right?
Yeah.
Put it on the wrong person, blame the wrong thing, almost cost her life and maybe our marriage. So there are a lot of bad therapists too. There are a lot of, you know, yeah. and so trusting God to have someone for you. But I tell you, someone who's gifted and qualified, like I said, a real trauma therapist, the one Sarah has now, is outstanding. And yeah. it may take a looking at three or four of them to find out who might be most helpful to you if you can afford that. If not, maybe finding a friend. Stuff like Joni and I shared about a caring ear,
yeah.
A caring heart and a listening ear. Valuable stuff. Might want to revisit that as well. This yeah. from a girl named Bree. Last week, I felt a nudge from Father to go through the podcast. You and Sarah shared in detail how you walked through trauma surfacing. I'd heard a bit, knew you guys were walking through a challenging time, but my goodness, to hear the story all laid out. I really want you to know those episodes cracked me open. It helped me have hope in the midst of so much pain my parents are walking through right now. I've been learning about trauma and my emotional health work for the past years, but something landed deeper in my heart toward my parents through your personal story. Thank you from the bottom of my heart to both you and Sarah for helping me grieve with God what has happened to my mom and dad. You can hear more about that this year, grieving with God.
Yeah.
And then to gain a clearer understanding of them as humans doing the absolute best they could, and to tether myself to some kind of hope that is centered on Father's nature, not their ability to fix themselves or, Lord help me, the little girl inside me who's been desperately trying to fix their marriage all these years. Yikes. I'm so grateful for you and Sarah's humility, honesty, willingness to share the truth and love. I wish I could hug you both. And man, that would include you. You've been part of all these conversations with Kyle, and you've been as forthright with the trauma that you battle and honor. I used that language the other day with somebody, to honor the trauma, because they were trying to fight through something they weren't ready to fight through yet. And the pressing in was not leading toward healing. And I just said, you know, you yeah. need to honor that trauma. And they looked at me like I'd speak in Greek. I said, what do you mean? I said, you have it. It's there. Yeah. So why don't, instead of ignoring it, you just honor the fact that it's there and adjust your life accordingly, make room for it, and yeah. make room for it in your conversations with God so that he can heal it, so that there can be freedom to go on. But I love this. This is from somebody who's not necessarily traumatized, except she's trying to fix someone else's trauma and mm-hmm. feels responsible for it, which is a traumatizing reality of its own.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And yeah. then this one, this is the last one I want to read. Then we'll have a little bit of time chat. Maybe listen to Friday's podcast this morning. This is one way back, right at the end of, I think, our story. She said, so beautiful. I was molested by my dad's best friend starting at 15. Makes me nauseous to even type that. I had thought I had dealt with it, but only through you two sharing these stories did I realize that I've only shoved it down. And I'm realizing how much all of this has affected my life, my actions, my reactions to things and people. But it wasn't until today that I realized that it has also affected my relationship with Father. What that man did to me made me feel guilty and dirty, and I can only now see that it's really been a part of my striving to earn Father's love. I've been battling this for almost 40 years, and I've never put it together. But just now, how very thankful I am for your voice in my life for these years. I can see how Father was literally been opening me up through your words and books. I've not wanted to read any of the materials you've referenced about the trauma stuff because mm-hmm. I just didn't want to face it all. Just want you and Sarah to know how dear you are to me. I'm so grateful for your encouragement to relax into Father's love, or this would all look very, very different. And I just, I mean, we've got hundreds of emails kind of like these. I picked these because they were in different areas. One of, you know, helping people who are traumatized, recognizing that that may be what's underlying some of their struggle. Yeah. To people who realize that that may be what my spouse is struggling with, and I'm trying to get them to act better, and that's not going to help them get to the pain. And I've told people this, you will never do anything more valuable for your spouse than help them find freedom from trauma. I tell you what, this I've been part of a lot of amazing things in my life, from Bridge Builders to Kenya to the Shack to He Loves Me. I've been part of a lot of amazing things in my life. Yeah. Nothing compares to walking with Sarah through her darkness and holding the patience to let healing come in her terms and her time and not force it for what I think I want out of a relationship. And there's nothing more valuable I've done to people taking a look at themselves saying, gee, there's something in here that I've... And a lot of people we talk to, it's not like Sarah. Sarah did have complete amnesia about her being molested by her grandfather.
Yeah.
And so those memories unfolding have been new to her as well as painful. Mm-hmm. But the number of people we meet that didn't have amnesia, I know it's there. I just have run from it my whole life, never faced that, never let Jesus have at it. Because I think a lot of the religious languages, you just forgive it and you go on. Yeah. And that kind of... The religious view of forgiveness is mostly just organized denial, sadly enough.
I just think about, too, how unkind the comment is of you just need to have enough faith in order for God to heal that. Or like if you're just increasing your faith, then you'll be able to work through that. But circling back to the last one of the emails that you just got done reading, trauma has an impact on the way that you view Father and the type of relationship that he wants to have with you and that he can have with you. At the very heart of it, I feel like trauma is at the very heart going after our deep core beliefs about who others are and about who God is, whether we recognize that or not. And so then to tell somebody, well, you just need to have more faith in the person that has been impacted by the trauma. Right? Like that, I know that I had some of those comments that came and it's like, yeah, but if Father is like some of the things that I've experienced in my worldly example, I don't want to know him. Yeah. I don't want to get involved with him. I just want to stay as far away and out of his radar and out of his sights as possible. Again, here comes my fawning. Like, I'll do whatever I need to do to stay off of his radar and in his good graces because I don't want the scale to tip in the other direction and all of a sudden be under his wrath.
And shame is something that religious, again, a lot of religion exploits shame instead of uncorking it. And what you said about it disfiguring God, long conversation last week. I wanted to get into it today. We probably would another time, but how much of our Christian example in the world disfigures the God we want people to know? Our arrogance gets transferred to him. Our anger gets transferred to him in people's minds. And I was taught that. I was taught that God was an angry God for all of human failure, and Jesus had to come and mollify that. So God, we were taught so many disfiguring things about God. That trauma, maybe being raised in religion is a trauma all of its own. Certainly not the same thing that Sarah went through, other people I know, but disfigures God and defines ourselves in terms that doesn't let love, rest, and play happen. It's just like you said earlier, it's just so far outside the frame of reference.
There is a lot there in regards to the disfiguring of the image in the heart of Father. And that describes the thief so well, right? The enemy so well of he's come to steal, kill, and destroy anything that has to do with the life that Jesus gave his life for.
And we started the conversation. We're so easily deceived. We are, those of us who trade in things of faith. By not just religious leaders and not just bad theology and books and songs, we're easily deceived by the devil himself, by darkness, that wants to keep us separated from the God who loves us so deeply. If we touch that love, it will transform us. But if I can keep you from that, I'm going to do it.
Or if I can get you to believe that there's no way that that playfulness, or there's no way that emotion of love, or that sense of delight, there's no way that that could be Father. Well, then all of a sudden, like, where do you go from there? I'm going to endure this God. I'm going to survive alongside of this God. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to coexist with this God, but I don't actually want to get to know him because I don't know that he's actually, that rest, love, and play are part of his invitation, or that he could delight.
And it's strange. Yeah. We're that disconnected from the God we supposedly want to spend eternity with.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That's what's crazy. Because literally, I want to be with God. I just don't want to be in hell. So
yeah, I just don't want to burn. Like, I just
now I
got to
go be with this God who I don't trust anyway anymore to throw a shoe at a wall. I think this year, I mean, I look at all that we went through last year, and for you to be on the podcast for such a time as this, I mean, we didn't really, I just some kind of walked into, and then, gosh, it really, I think, is a very helpful season. I know some folks from the God Journey have contacted you. You're kind of talking with more individually, which is fabulous, because that's a resource for folks. But I tell you what, I know we're going to get a lot of, I'm excited about, I had notes and notes of stuff, but man, this time goes by so freaking fast. It's crazy.
It does.
We'll start doing really a podcast every day, Kyle, and sell sponsorships so we can make a good living at this. And I'm kidding. But I'm looking forward to the year and digging down into some of this stuff, and let's get it all nailed down so we have the complete revelation of God before we get to episode 1000.
Oh, man.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.